not everyone wants the same thing out of this industry. And for us, the pandemic finally made us sit down and take a look at what do we want our career to look like? For so long, we've just been playing the game of like, what's an indie band supposed to do to be successful? We're just going to play the game until it finally works out for us. We were so obsessed with chasing the numbers. And finally, we realized like, maybe we can live the exact type of career that we want just by being creative and clever. We don't have to wait till we have 30 million streams on a song to tour all 50 states. That was the beauty of this tour, is we actually lived out exactly the type of career that we'd want. We were always thinking about, how do we make this fun for everyone? How can people get involved with this and also take joy out of it? It was our dream tour, and we actually made it happen just by being clever and inventive instead of sitting around and making excuses, waiting till some industry person comes and becomes our Jesus.
This episode is brought to you by DistroKid. DistroKid is a distribution service that can get your music into all the DSPs like Spotify, Apple Music, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram. Over a million artists have used DistroKid. I'm one of those artists. I've used DistroKid to get my music out, distribute some of my songs. As you know, as I look into all of these distribution services, I test them out. And DistroKid is great. They offer a ton of features, annual fee, unlimited uploads, and you keep 100% of your royalties. Check out distrokid.com. What's going on? Welcome to The New Music Business. I'm your host, Ari Herstand, author of How to Make It in the New Music Business, the book, third edition, coming very, very soon. Today, my guests are the guys from Walden, the band Walden, and their manager, Matt. They have an interesting story at the kind of the fall to the end during the winter of 2021, I guess September to December to be exact. They went on a 50-state tour. They called it 50 States on $50. And that means they left their hometown of Nashville with $50 that they could spend on expenses, and the rest they made happen. They booked it themselves. They don't have a booking agent. And it was a pretty crazy ride. They tell a bunch of stories in this episode. So if you want to hear some tour stories from the road and how they made it all work and how, 18 hours ago they landed their show in Pensacola, Florida, and how that all went down, we get into that. And, you know, they grossed $80,000 on this tour, which is quite a feat for never visiting the vast majority of these states or cities prior to leaving for the tour. Very impressive group of guys. Great music, by the way. You should check out Walden, the band. If you're into alt rock, if you love Coldplay, if you're into that sound and that whole style, these guys are a great rock band. Find them on Instagram. It's Walden Grams, or find them on TikTok, Where's Walden Tour. You can actually visit the website. We're going to link it in the show notes of the whereswaldentour.com, and you can kind of learn all about it and play with their interactive map. Find me at Ari Herstand on Instagram and Twitter. Find all of us that are making the show happen at Ari's Take on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. Visit ariestake.com. Get on that email list. You'll be notified about all future episodes and all the most important info on the new music business we send out to the email list. So ariestake.com. Get on that. And please give us a 5-star review on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, or however you're listening to this. Please give us that 5-star review. Give us a comment. Love to read these comments. All right, let's kick into the show. All right, guys, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having
us. Thank you.
Yeah, we got the band Walden here. We got their manager Matt here today. We have four people. This is the most packed episode I've ever had of guests all at once. I'm very excited to see how I can manage this. it's gonna be great.
Matt's a manager, so he can help you out.
Great, Matt, you're gonna definitely have to help me with this one. Okay,
family affair with Walden.
Absolutely. All right, so this is interesting because I'm excited for you to tell the story today, because you know the headline, which I introed already, is that the band Walden did a Where's Walden tour, where they visited 50 states, played 51 shows And you're a totally independent band. I'm assuming you guys kind of booked this yourself and promoted it. And what was most impressive is because, you know, a lot of bands go on tours and they book it and they try to do it themselves and no one shows up and they lose their asses. They come home, they break up. I've seen that, you know, it's a timeless story. Unfortunately, it happens. In your initial email to me, you're like, yeah, between 100 to 300 people came to every show and you hadn't visited most of those states. So I want to know how you did all of this. Step me through the whole process, when you booked it, how you booked it, how you promoted it, and let's just, yeah, go from there. Who's going to kick us off?
Yeah, I'll kick it off on the booking side. Matt okay. and I and Jamie.
This is Andrew.
This is Andrew speaking. We kind of took control of the booking aspect of it. And the way we did it is...
Hold on, Andrew. Hold on. Yeah. Can you turn your reverb off? I know you guys are all musicians or something, but I got some echoing something happening here. And I want to make sure that we're not in the vocal session just yet. I think we're just going to keep it.
Totally. Is it still going? Check.
It's a little bit.
We don't It'll have any... Fine. We're on very basic...
Just kiss the mic.
It might be our massive house, Ari. We live in a pretty baller mansion here in Nashville.
Interesting. All right, keep going. We'll figure it out after. It's no problem.
I'll talk.
Okay.
Close to the mic. So
that's cool.
What we did is we have toured before, so we did have some main markets that we've been going to. Those included Atlanta, where we're from, Nashville, where we currently live, New York City, L.A., Denver. Mm-hmm. Anything I'm missing? Those were some of the main cities. And so what we did first was we booked shows in those markets and considered those, like, those were our anchor dates. So before we had anything, we knew exactly when we would be playing in New York City. We knew exactly when we would be playing in Chicago. That's one I forgot was Chicago and Denver and LA, et cetera. So that's how we started. Cool. And then once we had that, we knew we were going to sell tickets in those markets. We knew we were going to make money in those markets. So then it was about filling in everything in between. And the goal for that was, how can we do shows that are, one, interesting and fun for us, and then interesting and fun for our audience? So, for example, that is how we found ourselves in West Virginia rafting on a river with a rafting guide who is the man. His name is Nate. And then after our rafting trip, we went and set up a show and played for the entire, you know, crew of rafting guides that live there on a mountain. So it was like, where were we going to play in West Virginia? We didn't really know, but we wanted to have the ability to do something cool. And that opportunity fell in our lap.
So before we get into all these other shows and the West Virginia rafting trip and all that, so you felt confident about Chicago, New York, Atlanta, Nashville. How many times had you visited those cities prior?
You can go ahead, Rich.
Well, we've been in New York like six times before that, five times. We played in Atlanta. We've been a band for 10 years. We're originally from Atlanta. We went to school in Athens, Georgia, University of Georgia. So we've been playing in Atlanta in the southeast area for a long time. And then we made one California trip before. Never played in Denver. However, we knew we had a ton of fans in Denver.
How did you know that?
Just like our, I don't know, just a bunch of Southeast people have like moved out to Denver, and we just had a feeling. And then, you know, Spotify stats, etc. You know,
okay,
we felt good about that one. Chicago, we felt great about.
Okay, cool. So, all right. So you had some of these anchor dates that you knew going out were going to be your, you were going to sell well and theoretically some money makers help you get to through the whole show. So that was going into this. How many of those were there?
There were, I think, seven. So that was Atlanta, New York, Chicago, Denver, L.A., and I'm probably missing a couple, but
are you asking how many of them were booked before we actually left?
Like, well, no, let's get into it. So, let's do it. So you had seven, but no, but like, yeah, it's good to know going into this, you wanted to do 50 states, seven of those, dates, you had a draw in. You'd previously played. You knew you could probably get some people out, do well in those cities. So talk to me about the process of booking from start to finish. You have seven. You're like, all right, those are anchor dates. What about the other 43?
Right. So I'll take this again. Yeah. So what we then did was we started the full-on onslaught of outreach to literally everything. The idea was like, if we
throw thousands of emails. You know,
the idea was like, if we reach out to every single possible place where we could play, there's going to be something that pops up that's really cool. So so that is what ended up happening. We were reaching out to every brewery in a city, every unique performance space. You know, we played a really cool DIY space in Boise, Idaho, where we had never been before. So that was, it was really the idea of like, throw all the paint at the canvas and see what comes out.
Okay. But let's, I'm incessant and obsessed with the details and the how and the specifics. And so I want to get into the weeds here. So you, So what do you mean that, who are you reaching out to and how did you find these people? How did you stumble upon this center in Boise, Idaho and all that stuff? So like, step me through the process. Who's doing what? There's four people here right now. And like, who took what? What day were you starting the tour? What day did you start booking this, doing the reach outs? Who are you reaching out to? What did the emails look like? Like, step me through this process here.
I can talk on this for a while. So we started a spreadsheet, which has thousands of rows now with contact information, the city, all the information we needed. We had email templates on Gmail. So if I'm reaching out to 40 venues in North Carolina, I had a template that where I had to adjust a few things, but then we were reaching out, and this was Matt, Jamie, and I took the bulk of the booking work.
Okay.
So we honestly, when we started the tour, we started on September 10th. We had everything up through the East Coast and into Chicago. It was about 20 shows booked before we left on the tour. So do some quick math. You got 30 shows left to book while on the tour. So we were, a huge part of this was that our van was a grind zone. The hot spot was working harder than you could ever imagine.
And we were multiple hot spots.
The specifics of it are literally like, breweries in insert city, get the contact info, make your list, and bomb the emails out. And and you know, so the Boise one, another strategy that I found during the tour was going on local Facebook pages. So I went and found local Boise musicians network or musicians of Boise, and I made posts about our tour. I said, anyone interested in figuring this out with me? Someone reached out right away and was like, dude, this is cool. I have a space. I think we can put something together. And sure enough, we had 60, 70 people packed in this like warehouse space in Boise. And it was, you know, a really good time. So that
DIY was, tour postings too.
That, yeah. DIY tour postings is another group. It's
Facebook
a big group. Facebook group that I think is, you know, national. And,
story with that.
And it allows you to say, hey, I got a tour coming through the Northeast. I need a date. I need one date in Philadelphia. Anyone got anything for this date?
So you were just Googling breweries. Why did you start with breweries in the cities versus traditional music venues?
We didn't necessarily start with breweries. What happened was we started reaching out to all the traditional music venues. But as you know, if you've never been to a city, it's hard to get a date somewhere. That's just how it is. So the places where we sold tickets, we can get legit, you know, venues. But what we found is for our specific tour, breweries and establishments like breweries were a great kind of middle ground where, one, we could guarantee ourselves an audience, and two, guarantee ourselves a little bit of a payday. You know, what we found is that venues are a lot less likely to kind of, you know, go ahead and say, all right, $400,
give you a guarantee,
you got it for
right.
the night. There's a guarantee for you. But a brewery is more open to saying, you know what, a few hundred bucks, we love your music, come on down, play a set, and you know, it is what it is.
So these brewery shows, they were giving you guarantees and they weren't charging tickets necessarily. They figured you were providing entertainment for their guests.
Right.
Okay, cool.
Exactly.
And if I can jump in for a sec, Just taking it back 1 second. So before we hit the road, I mean, before any of the actual on tour started out, we had to map out how are we going to get through 50 states. And for context, we did it in 91 days. So it wasn't just like we could play in this state in any given day. Once we had about 10 dates booked, which were major cities, like LA was in November, November 6th. Denver, Colorado was November 14th. New York was September 22nd. So once we had certain anchor dates, we knew how many days were in between each date. So we knew like if it was actually physically possible to get from one state to the next. So in the first 25 state, I think the first 25 days, we hit like 21 shows. It was like boom, 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 not very much downtime. But then New York City, we're there for like 3 or 4 nights. And then we keep moving. So we had a lot of those key cities that we knew, like, A, we had to book months in advance. I mean, I think the guys actually booked Atlanta and New York first, and they were booking that in like April, May. So like many months in advance. And then once I was on board with the tour, we started to book some more of the cities like Chicago, Ann Arbor, Michigan ended up being a venue show, et cetera. So once we hit the road—
Where'd you play in Ann Arbor, the Blind Pig?
Played the Blind Pig. I went to school there, and I'd always wanted to put a show there, and so it was cool to go back.
You went to the University of Michigan?
I went there, yeah.
Cool. What years?
I graduated in 2018.
Okay, so post Wolfpack, I guess. All right.
Post Wolfpack, but they came and did a free show on the streets my like junior year, which was awesome. It was like a pop up show, so super cool of them. But all that to say, We like had a spreadsheet with every single day of the tour listed out. And then anytime we booked a show, we'd highlight it blue. We'd highlight it green.
No, just kidding.
As soon as we finished it, we highlighted a different color, and dates we needed to book were a different color. So Andrew, Jamie, and I took a lot of lead on the booking side, like Andrew mentioned. And anytime we booked a new show, it was like a victory. Like we have stories to tell, and we'll get into those, but it was, you know, a lot of building the plane and flying at the same time type of thing. But we knew at the minimum we had this mission that the guys came up with, which was we're going to tour all 50 states. And we did it. We played a show in every state and made at least some money in every show, and came out on top at the end, and we're still standing. So
amazing. So logistically, you're saying, okay, you got this spreadsheet. I'm assuming this is a Google sheet because it's shared and it has to be in the cloud. You're not each having your own Excel sheets needing to email each other and, you know, getting all that messed up. So, okay, you're storing this in the cloud. Did you use any other booking services like India on the Move or anything else for research or outreach or anything like that?
I used India on the Move. A good amount to just find venues, but I found it was just pretty old school and outdated. Yelp ended up being our best friend. If you search like bars with live music in the, you know, insert city, there'll be a Yelp article or two, and almost always the coffee shops or breweries or bars listed on that article were legit. So Yelp ended up in my experience being like probably my go-to resource for finding. Andrew took lead on a lot of the Facebook DIY stuff, which worked out a couple times really well.
The Facebook stuff, there's a few little hacks there. Is if you can't find the contact information on a venue's site or an establishment's website, most likely their email is on their Facebook page because it's a required field. So there were a lot of places that I was like, this could be a really cool thing, but clearly their website wasn't updated, but the email was right on their Facebook page, or they replied to a Facebook message.
I found that if you Facebook message a brewery or a bar or a coffee shop, that typically goes to the owner, and they almost always responded pretty quickly. So they might be like, hey, definitely interested, email this person or call this person. But I got to the point where we were calling venues. There were some last minute bookings, Ari, and we can go on for days about this, but you can ask the guys. I'm making 50 phone calls to every brewery in Pensacola, Florida, basically begging someone to take us. And because you know, this plan shifted, put us in this city instead of this city, and we had this much time. So like the show had to be Monday night. But we were traveling with a PA system, rack unit. The guys are super professional touring artists, so we could basically plug and play anywhere. So there was definitely some, you know, I'd say like a traditional promoter or agent might have looked at some of our tactics and thought that's not how you do it. But it worked for us.
That's amazing. And Matt, were you on the road with them too? Or were you doing this remotely?
Yep. So for a little more context, I met the guys that year through a friend.
That year, and, you mean 20, last year, 2021?
Less than a year ago now. It was March 2021. And we conceived the tour together, and they did all the branding and came at me and were super excited.
You made that sound kind of sexual, Matt. We conceived the tour together. on the first day we met.
Yeah, literally the first time I ever met these guys in person, I was in Nashville, coincidentally. I had been introduced to Richard and Eric like a month prior, and we went to get drinks, and I didn't have any expectations, but I was trying to become a manager at the time, and they happened to be looking for management. And literally, I mean, I want Eric to tell the story, but in the first meet, let's just say the Where's Walden tour came from that. So cool. Eric, you want to fill in the blanks there?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're sitting at this bar called Rosemary and Beauty Queen in East Nashville. It's one of our favorite.
That's what it's called. I've been thinking about what was that spot called for a while. So thank you, Eric.
And so we're sitting there with Matt, and he's just trying to sort of get to know our band and understand our situation and how he can fit into the whole picture. And he figured out that we have a van. We had a nice van that we were just sitting on, and we weren't really touring, obviously, because the pandemic had made things pretty difficult. But he had got to thinking, he was like, guys, we could do some sort of tour with your van. Like, we don't have to sit here. And then he went to the bathroom. And at the same time that he went to the bathroom, I like started going off on a little train of thought, because this was around the same time that the pandemic was making me go nuts. And I was like, I just want to travel anywhere, you know, just get out of here. We've been stuck in our house. And I've always wanted to see all 50 states. That's just like a weird bucket list item I've always wanted to cross off. Yeah. And then I was like, why can't I combine that with our band? And we do a tour and we try to hit all 50 states. So Matt gets back and I'm like, I got it, dude. This is what we're going to do. We're going to tour all 50 states. And Matt's like, okay, cool. That sounds cool.
Yeah.
In my head, I was like, these guys are nuts, and I fucking love it. Like, let's go. Yeah.
That's great.
So, but to answer your original question, I did go on the road with the guys, and we also brought on a friend of mine, a friend who I went to Michigan with, who was a photographer, and he captured the entire tour. Every second of it. We have so much content, hard drives worth, and his name is Sam. We called him Sam with the cam, and he was constantly shooting. And so the six of us were really the touring party. And Sam was also my right hand man, and, you know, logistics. And, you know, if things just had to get done and required a human being to do it, you know, Sam was like my co-tour manager.
And that's his right hand man in regarding to shooting as well.
Oh yeah. I learned a lot about photography being Sam's assistant. That was the one time he got to boss me around.
Was Sam shooting video as well? Cause you guys got some video capture from the dates too, right?
Yeah. Ton of video.
Tons of video.
Yeah. Cool. So tell me one of these last minute, let's back up a little bit. 20 shows before you left for the tour. So you had 30 to book.
That's generous, by the way. I think it was more like 15, like solidified, and then like five holds that were like,
got it.
Maybe we were going to do that show, maybe not, but like 15, like confirmed, ready to be announced.
Okay. So give me some last minute, oh shit moments where, what was the closest call you ever had with not having a show?
Matt, you got to tell the Philly story.
There's a couple there. The one that comes to mind is Philly. So on night three of the tour, I'm still getting to know these guys, right? Jamie's not here, but I'm still getting to know them. I knew Sam because he was a friend of mine, but I wanted to, you know, Sam, I wanted to deliver. Like, I wanted to show the guys like what I was made of, and be able to bring opportunities and such. And I had I'd booked a fraternity party at UPenn in Philly. And so we knew we wanted to do Philly because Pittsburgh was completely out of the way. So it was Philly, and it was going to be a Friday night. It had to be this date. And at our third show, which was Virginia in Richmond, we played at an art gallery, which was so cool. Like maybe 15 people came, but those people all bought t-shirts and all had a great time. And we have great photos from it. But at that show, I got the email that the fraternity had to pull out due to the university not approving of the event. I actually had two different schools give me the same information at the same exact time, UConn and Philly. It's like the fraternities colluded and wanted to ruin my night. And I'm like this upbeat, cheery guy, and the guys only knew me in that light. But in the middle of their set, like I got real pouty, and I was like, like I wanted to be present at the show, but also this was a Tuesday night and the Philly show was going to be that Friday. So I had to figure something out. So I jumped on my laptop. And just started sending, like, the subject line was like urgent booking requests, like Walden in Philly, X date. I sent out like 25 emails and I didn't tell the guys about any of this. I wanted to keep their spirits up, finished the show, got in the van. We're driving to like a Motel 6 at 1 a.m. and I break the news. And I'm like, guys, I'm going to figure this out. Like, just no one stress. Like, we got this. And I got an email from the owner of like 100-cap like dive bar in Philly called The Fire. The owner emailed me at 1 a.m. Hi, Matt, it's Karen. Call me. I got that email at 1 a.m. So I called her at 1 a.m. in the van. I was like, guys, I think Sam might have even, we might have a video of this somewhere.
Nice.
And I speak with her. And it's funny, my mom's name is Karen. So I instantly, you know, broke bread with her and we're having a great chat. Nice. And she's like this opera singer, has like a lot of history. And she owns this rock venue that boasts like all these rock bands, like My Chemical Romance played there and whatever. And she likes us. And she said, a band just backed out. Friday's open. But we hadn't played in Philly. So she said, the date's yours if you can get 3 local bands on the bill. And, you know, I'm like, all right, challenge accepted. I said, I'll have it by noon tomorrow. So the next day we're in D.C. and the guys are at some museum. What museum was it, guys?
No, we were at the
Lincoln Memorial.
Oh, no. I'm talking about
the Lincoln Memorial.
Smithsonian.
First, we're at the Lincoln Memorial and the guys are taking photos. And I'm in the corner where there's one outlet, like laptop plugged in on a hot spot, like grinding away.
I've got the video. We're enjoying the Lincoln Memorial, and I pan over the camera, and Matt is actually sitting in the corner of the Lincoln Memorial, totally zoned out on his laptop, headphones in, sending
good
emails.
Manager,
amazing yeah. manager,
and so I was like, I got to get fans, so I went on Instagram, looked at like hashtags, I went on Spotify, I found like local Philly legends, DM'd every band, I messaged every person I know in Philly, I went on Facebook, literally like. You know, tactics that would have come right out of your book. Like I was just like any on full offensive press to like get bands. And I found a band called Pinewood Derby. They were like 16 or 17. They lied and told me they were 21. And they were like instantly like, we're in. And so, and they're like kind of alternative punk. Like it was awesome. And then
could they bring anyone of age that could drink?
So we'll get to that. And so the answer is no, but it was still a great night. And then, you know, they recommended some other artists. And then I ended up finding a second artist, Ben Roberts, who was like friends with them in the same like scene, right? It was like this like Philly like music scene. And so
the same 16 year old scene is what we're talking about
pretty
here?
Much,
got
pretty much.
Okay. Greatest scene we've ever been a part of.
And, Karen and needs then, to be more specific. Don't not just local bands. You want like local bands of age. But anyway, continue. Yeah.
And then the venue hits me back that they found another artist and who was like moving to Philly. So they found, I'm like, all right, we got a bill. So we put a poster together, last minute Palooza. We go to Temple University. I'm like handing out flyers to like everyone I can. It was like down the street from the venue. Wow. And we had no idea what to expect, but the capacity was like 100. I think we sold like 81 or 82. And each, the Pinewood Derby and Ben Roberts each drew like 20-ish. Nice. We drew like 25. And maybe we each drew like 25. And I think the third guy drew like 10 or something. But regardless of the draw,
amazing.
We like put it together and the whole day I'm just like frantic. Like I'm so worried that it's going to like be an absolute crapshoot. And it was in the best way. We get to this bar, we set it up and it's just really like, it's kind of dingy, but it's like pretty rock and roll. Like it's a dive room. And I'll let the guys tell the story of the show, but up till the actual first band kicked off, I was petrified because I really didn't want to disappoint the guys. Like I always felt like I had to like prove that I could actually bring something to this tour since they have all this history as a band and done a lot of shows. So all that's to say, the bands all showed up and I'll let the guys tell the story, but last minute Palooza happened.
Nice. Great work.
Yeah. Matt is a legend for that. Cause it ended up being actually at least our favorite show of all time.
Yeah.
We played hundreds of shows and like, it actually ended up being like this young crowd just knew how to get down. They just like were freaking moshing from the start, like crowd.
These
surfing.
Are the teenagers that snuck teenagers. In with fake IDs. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, no. So on the fake ID front, the venue called me like, Matt, no one here is even 18. Like, and the venue was separated like the venue room and then the bar room. So they basically weren't allowing anyone to bring alcohol to the venue side. So it was like a dry concert room, but then anyone 21 up and up can drink in the bar room. The venue just wanted to look good and sell tickets and make their cut and all that. So they were cool with it. You know,
fucking love all ages shows, man. I wish more people would do it, but it's like when the business model has got to sell the alcohol, like the all ages kids, man, they're still getting into shows. They're not posturing or anything like that. That's great.
Man, exactly. No, these kids knew how to get down. Like we That's started fun. Our show, and it was actually funny because between each show, they just had a habit of all going outside, mobbing outside together. And then we start our show. There's basically no one in the venue. We were like, oh crap, did everyone leave? Was everyone here for the other acts? Yeah. And then sure enough, we start right as we start the first song. They all pour inside.
Nice.
And they start losing their minds.
The shout out Pinewood Derby, one of the guys from Pinewood Derby is like, are you about to go on? I was like, yeah, we're about to go on. He's like, okay, I'll go grab everybody.
Yeah.
And he goes and grabs Legend. The entire squad. And then they come in and just start moshing to our music. And I'm like, this is what it's about.
But yeah, like I took a crowd surfing guitar solo in that show.
That was a first. You could wring out our shirts with sweat.
Yeah, right? You got video for this? We got to see this.
Yeah, we do have video.
Yeah, we have video.
Yeah, we got
nice. Nice.
We'll send you some after.
Cool.
But yeah, that was, I'd say, the most like epic last minute one. Like Pensacola, which was state or Florida was state 49. The night before it, I'm calling every brewery because we thought one thing was going to work out. It didn't. And so that was like, you know, who would ever take us kind of thing. And we got a cool spot and we had some fans who met us in Alabama who drove like a couple hours out to our show in Pensacola, Florida, and ended up being like both a good merch night and also just like a good, like we were shooting a music video on the beach earlier that day and a couple who was doing a nationwide tour in a van, just like for fun, like just traveling around the country. We hit it off with them during our music video shoot, and then they came to the show and had the best time and like really were like supporting us. So it was so cool, man. None of this would have been possible without like really sweet people coming through and supporting us at these shows and in between.
So that one was booked
within like less than 24 hours before we played. That one was booked like 18 hours before.
Whoa. And that was where in Pensacola?
It was a brewery. Honestly, the breweries are starting to like blend in my head. Like I'll send you the spreadsheet later.
That's fine. I'm like, I love this little thing on your website. So for anyone listening, you can check out Where's Walden Tour.com. And it's interactive. This is really cool where every stop of the tour is right here and I can roll my mouse over it and it tells me the date, the city you played. And then if I click it, it usually brings me to the Instagram post from that, like the recap of that show, exactly. Which is a lot of fun to kind of see all this. And it's got all the stats and all that here. And so you ended in Nashville, the grand finale, December 10th. And so you started, let me just get these dates right. So you started in Atlanta on September 10th, and then you ended in Nashville on December 10th, right? 90 days, craziness. And you went up the coast, you started in Atlanta, you went up to Maine, then you crossed over. I'm just a step through this all. Then we crossed over to Kentucky. We did a little loop-de-loop here. West Virginia, Indiana, Ohio, Michigan. Then we're going up through the Midwest here. We're hitting Chicago, Madison. Where'd you play in Madison? That's where I'm from.
Carbon 4 Brewing.
Don't know that spot, but cool.
That was another one where we had just out of our control. We had a Saturday night show booked in Madison. Mm-hmm. And through some things that were completely out of our control, that had to be canceled. So that was another frantic, oh my gosh, will you have us play Monday? And they were like, sure.
Yeah, cool. And then Minneapolis, also a second home for me. Then you got your North Dakota, or you're going through the Dakotas in Montana. Then we're going through up to Washington. We got Seattle coming down the coast through California.
Seattle, we flew out to Alaska from Seattle.
Oh, shit. Okay, so Seattle, that's when you go to Alaska.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's interesting. October 28th in Seattle. You flew from Seattle. Okay, so you went round trip. So you did October 23rd in Alaska, flew to Seattle, played that show a few days later. Did you spend some time in Alaska?
Yes.
Yeah, we spent like 4 days there.
Yeah.
Wow. How was that? Yeah, was your first time there?
It was incredible.
Yeah, it was incredible. I've used an app before called Couchsurfing. I don't know if you're familiar with
it. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I've just, when I've been traveling before, I've used Couchsurfing, but I had met a guy named Tito on Couchsurfing. I've never actually stayed with him, but leading up to this, he saw that we were coming to Alaska to play a show, and so he absolutely hooked it up, man. He found us through his friends. He found us a free Airbnb. They took us on, they climbed a mountain with us. We climbed the snow-capped mountain range. It was amazing. And then the next day, we toured a glacier together. So he couch surfing is a very cool app. There's people on there who are just doing that because they love it. And he's the ultimate host, and he showed us an amazing time the whole stay for Alaska.
We loved him. That was amazing.
Sick. Mm-hmm. That's great.
And then we're rewinding for a sec to get to Alaska. And I'm sure we'll get into this a little bit, but we had a little bit of a live crowdfunding going on our website where people could donate to support different buckets of expenses. So people could donate a tank of gas, or they could donate a hotel somewhere to stay, or donate a round of drinks. And so we ended up creating the Alaska Fund, and then later on the Hawaii Fund, and we'd announced our shows, and you know, people donated. I mean, we made enough to cover like flights.
What was the platform you're using to donate?
We built our own website. It was on the website. So,
and I got to shout out the guys because they
PayPal
the
or oh you have support
and,
us
and
here
everything.
We used WooCommerce and WordPress.
So
we built a website with WooCommerce and WordPress.
Hell yeah!
Eric and I had some previous experience with WordPress, just in trying to pay the bills. And so we were just accepting, we were using credit card payments. You know, you could just like you buy any other product, you could
The site looks great. So you guys designed this? Who's the designer of the group?
So yeah, we hired. Eric, you go ahead. Tell how you.
I mostly designed the front end interface of the website. Andrew helped as well. Like Andrew said, him and I had work experience with day jobs building websites. But all the graphics and all the beautiful stuff you see on the site were actually designed by an illustration agency over in Japan called IC4 Design.
Mm-hmm. I'm putting this up on the screen here because this is so sick. So this whole drawing here was this is the IC4. What you're saying?
That's our tour poster.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, cool. The tour poster. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, Andrew's gonna
Statue
show
of Liberty right winking now. There. Cute. What was that?
So Andrew's showing you the
got
full
print out.
Oh wait, hold on. Let me stop sharing so I can see. Oh, there we go. Sick.
Yeah. So it was awesome, man. I reached out to them, just found them through a Google search. We were looking for Where's Waldo style illustrators. I found them. I thought it was a total shot in the dark, but the whole spirit of this tour was just send the email, see what happens.
Cool.
They responded to us. They loved the idea. So I sent them just a couple. I was like, it'd be really cool if we could work in like the Statue of Liberty and maybe the Golden Gate Bridge or something. And they send back the final poster, and it was just so above and beyond what we had asked
so
for.
Incredible.
It was amazing. And so also too, you can't really see on the website, but actually the four of us are snuck into the tour poster like it's Where's Waldo. Each of the
Where are you?
You can see them in Mount Rushmore right there.
You can't tell you that.
Oh, that's you? All right. Oh, yeah. There you go.
Andrew is playing the drum right above Mount Rushmore.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
I love this.
So, it's a piece of the art. Route. Like, it's a beautiful piece of art that we're so excited that they wanted to be a part of our tour, and we got to work together on it.
The poster's great. What were you selling those at your shows for?
30?
Great.
We ended up dropping it to 25, but we started them at $30.
Okay. So let's talk about your merch game. First off, major props on the website, on setting up the WooCommerce integration with WordPress. I mean, that's no easy feat. I know that. And you probably made a bunch more money because you didn't have to give up commissions to a platform like an Indiegogo or GoFundMe or something like that, which takes between 5 to 10% of all of it. And so WooCommerce is just the transaction fees of, I'm assuming, around 3% or something like that. So cool. So let's talk your merch game, because I'm assuming, with most of these breweries giving you $100, how much, give me an average of what they're paying like these people.
100 to, that's 100 what I figured. To 300 maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So you're making 1 to 300.
There were some good ones that were over 500, like 500, 800, a grand. Like
guarantees?
We had two breweries do 1,000.
Real quick, I want to let you know about DistroKid. Well, I'm sure you already know about DistroKid, but they are partners with Ari's Take, and they are a great company that can help get your music distributed to Spotify, Apple Music, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram, all of that. Over a million artists use DistroKid. I'm one of those artists. I have distributed some of my music in the past. And something I appreciate about DistroKid, as not just an artist, but someone who studies this space, is they have been one of the most innovative companies over the last 10 years. They came in and completely changed the game. One of the first companies offering unlimited uploads, and now most of the other distributors have had to change their policies to kind of copy and follow suit what DistroKid was doing, and the industry had changed, of course. DistroKid doesn't keep a commission. That means you keep 100% of your royalties and earnings from the DSPs. They also offer payment splitting. They call it splits, something that for me at this point is a deal breaker. I don't want to have to cut checks to all my collaborators and the producers and everybody else that is owed royalties and owed splits from my earnings. DistroKid will cut those checks directly. You can get them to your collaborators to sign up, and then DistroKid will cut all the checks to all your collaborators. And they were one of the first to offer that of the DIY self-service distributors. DistroKid continues to innovate. Check them out. If you need to get your music out there, DistroKid.com.
So
tell me this, Matt. All right. So tell me about the negotiation and how this worked, and like what's the cold pitch email, and then how did you negotiate? Like, how was there such a big range from some shows are 100, some shows are 1,000?
Totally. I mean, in terms of like the breweries and the bar type shows, or just shows in general?
All of it.
I mean, hey, like the guys put together such an impressive package of, our EPK and all that. Like, you know, it's just really inclusive. And
where's your EPK? Is it still up? Can I see it?
Yeah. The website /EPK.
All right. I've never shared my screen during a podcast interview before, but I'm doing it this time. So if you're watching on YouTube, you get to see this. If you're listening somewhere else, you can head over to YouTube and see it. But all right. So let me pull this up here.
So pop the EPK up. And then I just have to say, like, the guys have been doing this for a long time. They've played festivals. They've been on tour. They've supported artists. So, you know, to me, it was like not a hard sell. Like, these guys have, they're awesome performers, like make amazing music, and you're getting them like for way less than you should be paying them. And so the guys would never say that to like a brewery owner on the phone, but like I would, because I believe that. And I also, you know, having seen the guys, it all clicked for me the first time I saw them in July. I was like, oh yeah, this is a show. Like, this is an experience. This is just like a rock band or something like that. Like, this is a full stack experience. So in terms of the negotiations, actually everyone in the band booked at least one of the shows. So everyone like had their hand in like at least one or two booking. It wasn't like I did everything or Andrew did everything. Like, everyone contributed in some way. Like, Richard's family owns a farm in Hillsborough, North Carolina, and we did a farm show early on. Eric hooked us up with that rafting trip by posting on his Instagram story. Does anybody know any rafting guides in West Virginia? And got like 5 hits, and one of them led us to meeting the legendary Nate, who's now our boy over in West Virginia. Cool. And Jamie and Andrew, who we call Rue, and I were the ones on the email cold blasting. But the pitch was simple. I mean, I can show you at some point, but you know, this band is setting out on a 50-state tour. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to jump in. Ari, you were asking about the negotiation aspect. There honestly wasn't a ton of negotiation. Obviously, Matt, you can tell he's super passionate, and he was selling us as best as he could. But honestly, it was kind of an aspect of like, take what you can get. You know, when we're trying to book a last-minute show somewhere where we've never played, we don't have, you know, that much standing to just be like, no, we need at least this. But we did our best in getting what we could get and hoping that people would be supportive of what we were doing and be willing to maybe have a night where maybe they don't make as much as they normally do, but they have the most unique experience.
Matt's also the upgrade king. So like, Matt is a phenomenal negotiator. Like, so we went to Yosemite when we were out in California, and we're checking in. We got a one of
heated tent.
A heated tent. And Matt's talking to the receptionist. He's like, so what other places can you stay? And they're like, they got like the cabins. They got like the motel style rooms. And Matt's just like, can we get an upgrade?
He was never afraid to ask.
You don't ask, you don't get.
You got us, what, 2 free hot tubs on this tour? Is that right?
Yeah, there were a couple times where like we stayed somewhere and like it was like an Airbnb type thing or like a cabin. And, you know, like, sometimes, you know, you don't get it if you don't ask. And I was like, well, are there any hot tub rooms available? And they're like, yeah, well, there's this one. And it costs more. And I was like, well, no one's taking it. Can you just, you know, like, there put us in the room? And she's like, let me make a quick call. And she asked. And I was like, I want to bring this to the guys. And lo and behold, we got the hot tub. So,
hell yeah.
But I think, like, you know, I'll be fully transparent. There were a couple shows where we didn't get a guarantee. You know, it was tips or it was just merch or it was a meal. You know, we got a lot of meals hooked up, a lot of free beer. Like we were rolling in the free beer. Every brewery afterwards, they did not expect a show of that caliber and professionalism. Right. And they would give us like 10 six packs of like their craft beers. And then we just use those as gifts the next city we went to and like give them away to like people who host us and stuff. Like it was like beer became a commodity that we were trading, bartering with.
It was our currency for sure.
It was sure currency. But I mean, ultimately, like, you know, a lot of these places have live music, so they're used to booking bands. They want cover bands or whatever. But, you know, like we played a show in University of Connecticut at a bar called Ted's, and it's like the college bar. And they had like an outdoor area called The Cage, and it was a Thursday night and it was packed. It was bumping. Mm-hmm. The dude who booked us loves Walden's music and really promoted it and is trying to get us back right now, which is really cool. And you know, we had a flat fee and it went so well and they gave us extra money, like, hey, like, take this, like, you guys deserve this type of thing.
Oh, that's great.
And so for every show where it was like a low guarantee or it was like $100 dinner or whatever, there were a couple where, you know, the venue really bought into what we were doing. And once they saw the guys perform and do their thing, they're like, how did we get such a steal? And we want to like hook these guys up. So, we were definitely not greedy. But I was stern in that, like, I wanted to make sure the guys got something out of it. We donated a show to an air museum in North Dakota. So unpaid, we sold like 2 t-shirts. I think it was our least lucrative night, but because it was a nonprofit, we ended up getting a donation letter and are able to write off like a $2,000 donation to that museum. So we didn't even know we'd be getting that, but you know, for tax purposes, like that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Okay. So, So when you reach out initially, you said he had a template in Gmail and stuff like that. I'm assuming the cost isn't discussed up front. It's kind of like we're coming through. These are our open dates. That's what you'd say. You'd say, what's your budget?
Well, not in the beginning. We weren't saying what's your budget in that first email. The first email was basically like, we're doing this crazy thing. Do you want to be a part of it? Here's some videos. And also like, there are 2 dates that are going to work. That's it. If you don't have those dates, we're moving on. So it was, we had to stick to our routing so much that was really the key. It was like the first email was like, here's who we are. If you're about it, here's the dates we can be there. And that is what got started the conversation. And we got a lot of replies. We got a lot of good replies that were like, we're booked those dates, but we love what you guys are doing. We're following the tour. So we were like, great.
Wait, there's a story there though. In Omaha, Nebraska, we were trying to get this bar and it had to be this one night. And this bar had a band playing from like 8 to 12, a bunch of like middle-aged adults, like cover band, horn section, really cool. And they had it from 8 to midnight and it was like a Saturday night. And so I said to the venue, can we play 6 to 7? You know, can we get in there early and just get a set in? She's like, I don't see why not, but the money's been allocated for that band. So, you know, you're gonna have to figure it out with them. She reaches out to the band and says, all right, Matt, here's the dude's info. Go talk to him so we can talk like drum kit, backline and all that. And I get on the phone with this guy and he's like all pissed. And he's like, man, like, you know, I just got off from the venue. They're telling me you guys are opening. Like, that's cool. But like, man, we had a show last night. We have a show the night after. Like, we don't even want, like, we need a break. Like, do you guys want our spot? And I was like, hell yeah. And so we ended up getting the spot. And then at the end, we got paid like $600. And
wait, do you have 4 hours worth of music?
No, but we would typically.
You played the same 45 minute set 4 times.
Right. It was just on repeat. But you know, we had
basically a 2-hour kind of not cap. Max, but 2 hour cap, pretty much. That's what we would go up to. But there were some times where people were encouraging us both vocally and financially to keep playing. And we had multiple shows where Matt jumped in on guitar for a post set jam. We were switching instruments. Like someone would hop on my drums and I'd, you know, go grab a drink real quick. So that's how we extended it.
Fun.
Yeah, cool. We turned it into a party. But yeah, I got this cash envelope from the bar and it was addressed to the other band. So it was like pre-sealed, pre-deposited, and they flaked. We took the show. We didn't even do as much music. There was a dude in the crowd who offered to pay us like, I think, a couple $100 to do an entire set. And we were like, we're not doing that, but like maybe a couple more songs. Mm-hmm. Richard came out and did like a Jack Johnson like cover solo while everyone was going and getting like free tequila shots or something. So we definitely, you know, a lot of audibles. But that's what made it fun, was like no two shows were the exact same.
It's great. So let's talk merch, because you know, with a lot, some free shows, $100 shows, you know, these lower guaranteed, like the prices you're mentioning is not something that can sustain six guys and a van and gas on, you know, for 90 days on the road. So I'm assuming merch had a bit to do with covering some of the costs, at least for gas and hotels and stuff like that. So tell me about the merch game.
Yeah. So actually, your article on Print On Demand was a very valuable resource.
All right.
I was like, we were trying to implement it for so long. And I was like, we just got to figure this out for this tour. Because one, we don't have enough space to bring everything on the road. We had like our top two seller shirts like on the road. Other than that, we had samples, and then we did the whole thing print on demand. And I think I think also what's important to talk about here is like, so the concept of the tour was 50 states. It was called the Where's Walden Tour, 50 states on $50. And what that really means is we started with $50 in our pocket. We did that because we were broke from the pandemic. We were like, we want to do something amazing. Let's not let finances get in the way of doing what we love to do. So we had $50 in our pocket, and we left on the road, and we could only use money through ticket sales, merch sales, and donations to pay our way and keep all of us afloat. You know, $20 per diems per member. You know, we got a lot of meals free. We slept on a lot of floors. We put together funds to get flights to Alaska, flights to Hawaii. The merch pretty much, if not doubled our income, the guarantee or the show revenue every single night. And that plus the donations kept us in the green the entire time, which was the goal. We never want to spend that $50 that we left off with. We want to keep that in our pocket, and we're only going to use the money that we made. And we did it through the merch, you know, which was great and like a huge hit. And, you know, us at the show saying, can we sleep on your floor? Like, we're doing this crazy thing. Can you check us, you know, can you buy us a meal? Can you treat us? Can you treat the band to a tank of gas? Can you treat the band to a hotel room? Can you treat the band to a round of drinks? You know, we made all these fun, interactive like items. And then we shouted them out on the story. You know, we said anybody who donated and treated the band, when we're filling up that gas in Maine, we're like, thank you, you know, whoever, for doing this. Like, this is how we are, you know, literally without you, we wouldn't have been able to do this. So
you're saying that you did print-on-demand shirts. So, you know, a lot of these companies...
Everything print-on-demand as well.
What's that?
We had everything on print-on-demand on our website. So we use Printful. Hats, and posters. You could get... Yeah.
Posters, too.
And just to jump in, we obviously we had limited space for inventory. We had configured, Jamie, who's not here, and his dad, who's like an engineer, had configured the back of the van to be like a wooden box that had cubbies and like perfect space allocation to fit like guitars here, rack unit here. Like it was
measured
a masterpiece.
Guitar cases.
Like literally measured.
So did you ship them? Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, so in some cities, like if I didn't have, like, so I did all the merch sales. And sometimes Richard or someone would help me, but I was like the merch guy.
Yeah.
In some cities we hired, like in New York at Mercury Lounge, we hired an intern for $50 and it was me and that intern doing it together. Sure. But I did a majority of the in-person sales, and we had a square reader. And if there was a design someone liked, and we didn't have their size. They could, of course, go on the website, they could order it, but how many people are not going to convert and go home and forget? So what I would do is I would still pick, I'd show them on an iPad or on a phone, the different designs and the sizes, and they tell me what they want. And I'd go on Square, I'd order it, I'd swipe their card. And then later that night, Richard and I were fulfilling orders and getting them to the people, because I didn't want someone to want something and then leave without it already placed. And doing that, I mean, obviously selling stuff in person is a lot more profitable. You know, you order 100 t-shirts, you know, those are going to cost, you know, X amount. But if you do print on demand, the margin's a lot smaller. So obviously in-person sales were key, but we almost sold out our in-person stuff. I mean, we did a big order of a popular t-shirt that we still have some leftovers from, but like a couple of Where's Walden t-shirt designs sold out, like a new design sold out in the first three shows. I sold all 50 t-shirts and we're like, well, shit, we got to order more.
And then when you would order more, are you ordering from a bulk inventory printing? Okay. And then you have it shipped to a venue or something like that?
To like a family member's house or, you know, we have to also just shout out all the family and friends who like either let us crash with them or, you know, let us use, like my friend Jackson lent us a drone and we got drone footage, and shout out Jackson. There's an amazing story from the second night, and I want to let Eric take the story involving Charleston, which was night two of the tour, September 11th, Saturday night, and we did not know where we were staying. And I'm setting up merch. So night two, I'm still getting my feet wet with running merch and stuff. And this dude walks in and he's like, "Hey, I just wanted to say I am really excited for the show. I vetted you guys, and I'm looking forward to it." And I was like, "No way." He's like, "Yeah, I come here all the time. It's a popular spot. It was called Tobin's Market." And he's like, "And I look up the bands and I really liked it." And so, you know, so show starts. It was a two set show. I'm gonna let Eric take it from here.
Yeah. I mean, so essentially what happened is that just when we got back on the mics for the start of the second set, I sort of kicked things off by just being like, "Hey, you know, we just want to mention that we don't know where we're staying tonight. So if anyone has a floor we can crash on, that'd be amazing. Come talk to us." And then we just rolled into the first song. And then sure enough, that same guy comes up to us after the show, and him and his wife are like, "We'd love to host you." And
even though he was like, "We have four empty bedrooms and we'd love to host you."
There you go.
Like, yeah, the house.
And he didn't just turn out to be like any stranger either. He's a famous ESPN sports writer. We had no idea. He ended up, we got back at like 1 a.m. We basically had to like break into his house. We thought we were waking up his whole family. And he's in there waiting for it. He's still up. And so we ended up having beers with him and hanging out and just telling stories. It was amazing.
And they made us pancakes in the morning.
That's great.
Yeah.
So all right. Let's so big picture takeaways now from all of this. What would you say if you were to do this all over again? What did you learn? What would you do differently this time?
Book further in advance.
And how far in advance did you start this? So you left where did I put it down? September 10th. You left. When did you start the booking process?
A few months before that, probably.
Okay.
No. You guys started in April. I think you hit up, I think, New York and Atlanta, like April or maybe May.
Most of the anchor dates, we're taking care of four plus months before leaving on the tour. But everything else like I said, we had the East Coast run up through the Northeast and then through Chicago.
Yeah.
Pretty much booked out, and up in Madison. But past that, so that would help. But on the other hand, the urgency of some of our requests did come out to have some of the most amazing shows of the tour. So obviously that's not something you want to do, is like plan to be in a terrible situation where you're desperate for a show 3 days before.
Right.
But some, like the Philly show, some of the things were, but you definitely, the promotion aspect, if we had some of the shows booked a month or two earlier, we would have been able to promote a lot better.
Sure.
And that's really the key, is that the word spreading would have just had more days to take hold. So that really would have been huge. Something else that I just want to note that made this tour successful that we just mentioned very quickly and glossed over is the fact that we were carrying a sound system with us. Mm-hmm. So these brewery shows, these little last minute things where it's like, we just are like, please let us play. A huge aspect of that was us being able to say, we're bringing our own sound, every single thing. All we need from you is a power outlet, and we're running our own sound. We're our own sound engineers.
Do you have lights too? So
we didn't have, we did have some lights. We didn't have a fancy light setup, but we had some floodlights and some cool vibe lights. And you know, if we played a house party, we could set up the vibe a little bit, but cool. that was a huge key that we would definitely do again and would be a huge recommendation for anyone trying to do something in a similar style.
Mm-hmm.
You have a sound system. The possibilities are endless. You can show up to a farm and play on a farm, right. An extension. Right. You can show up on a beach and it helps if you have stuff that sounds good. And right. So we were lucky enough to put that in our budget pre-tour, getting that.
Yeah.
But that's a huge thing.
Cool. Cool.
We had to sell some stuff in order to buy some stuff. So it was some transfers of assets, you know, sell this piece of gear so we can get QSC mains and things like that. Not to toot your horn, Ari, but I didn't read your book till after the tour. I wish I read it before. There were a lot of great like golden nuggets in there that would, I read it in January. I remember being
correct
like,
answer. No, I'm just kidding.
I was like, shit. Like somebody actually already like I didn't know anyone who had done this type of tour DIY. Like
sure.
I don't know if anyone's done like 50 states and whatnot. And so, you know, a lot of it, we were just figuring out Googling how to do shit and like mm-hmm. asking for help, posting on our Instagram stories. I'd post my Instagram stories. Who do I know in DC or yep. New York homies? Like who's in town? And then I get DMs and stuff. So in hindsight, I would have loved to have of course marketed the shows more and stuff. We didn't do any paid advertising. We thought that sure. kind of was against the spirit of doing this on such a tight budget. And so sure. it was all word of mouth. I would have loved to have had a really, really great video editor, not with us, but someone we can defer a lot of the content creation to, because a lot sure. of that fell on Eric and Richard, mm-hmm. And some friends. And so it was tough to, like consistently be posting content. We had a social media manager who kicked butt, but we were her first client. She's like fresh out of school. So, you know, she's learning with us type of thing. Cool. And so it was like, there are a lot of lessons that on the marketing side that would have been really great to like to utilize before some of these shows. But I wouldn't have changed a thing.
You're stretched a bit thin, I'd say, with how tight of a schedule it was. So yeah, like the promo and marketing and like, on your day off or your first day off in like 8 days, it's like, yeah. should we make TikToks to promote the New York show or should we like sleep?
yeah.
It was, oh man, it was, we were going like, it was a nonstop grind. And, you know, we'd go hiking as much as we could. I mean, I think we took a lot of time to really enjoy, you know, the nature and the scenery nice. Around us in different cities. You know, right. specifically, you know, we were in some state like North Dakota, we were in for 4 hours. But Hawaii, Alaska, Colorado, Chicago, we were in for 4 days. And so we were able to see friends. And, you nice. Know, I mean, we tried to journal and like, you know, stay mindful and like document, you know, our feelings and things like that as we went. I think Richard did the best job of that. I'd peek over in the van and he's like typing away. Nice. But I think like taking more time to really soak it in, you know, even as talking with you about it now, 3 months after the fact or 2.5 months after the fact, you know, so many feelings and experiences and emotions are coming back in terms of like we were going. Like it was my first tour. I've driven cross country multiple times, but it was my first like tour and I've always wanted to be on tour. And these guys had been on tour before and like so they kinda like were showing me the ropes. And then it got to the point where I was like, wait, I'm the manager. I need to keep us together and like get shit done. Like I don't care if we're tired, we have to book a show or we have to get like the graphic out on Instagram. And you know, my motto on the road was that the van was the new garage. Like we were a startup and we were building as we flew out of this van, and we did 3 hour driving shifts. Everyone drove except Sam, our photographer, because we always wanted him editing and such. And we would take shifts. And I mean, there were some times where from Vermont to Horse Cave, Kentucky was a 17 plus hour drive with a pit stop at Niagara Falls. And, you know, toward the end, we were like, are we going to make it to our friend's house? And then Andrew and I just champed it and everyone's passed out in the back. And he and I are bumping M&M, like drinking sodas and Red Bulls, eating candy. Yeah. And like, we were like determined, like we had the whole tour was very mission focused. And like, broadly speaking, it was play 50, you know, playing all 50 states, starting with $50. Yeah. But more specifically, it was like, get to the next, you know, city, like get somewhere, like book a show. Like it was very like, you could point to like the deliverable that had to happen for this thing to like succeed. And even looking back, especially with like the pandemic happening and everything, like we are so blessed and lucky that like people we met on the road, fans, family, you know, new fans, like it, we can't thank the people enough who supported us, because between sleeping in one bedroom apartments and crashing like on sleeping pads and eating ramen noodle and things like that, like a lot of sacrifices had to be made by our parents, you know, who supported us and such, and like hosted and fed us. And there's so many different pieces, and it just really like, it's like heartwarming, because it was like, it's not like we, like the guys, I think I wasn't originally going on the tour when I first, when the tour, when they came up, when we came up with the idea, I wasn't even managing Walden yet. That didn't really like fully kick into gear till like July. Leading up to then, I was just like pestering the guys, like, hey, like, you make any progress yet? Like, how's it going? Like, you want to jump on a Zoom? And in the back of my mind, I was like, I want to work with these dudes. But at the same time, like, they were just flying, you know, like just go on the fly, going and booking, and like they're gonna get the job done. And you know, like, I think the six, I don't think we could have done it the way we did it without the core six of us who were on that, and Vanny. I mean, our van was the real MVP here. So I don't know if I would change anything, but a lot of lessons have been learned, and a lot of those lessons we want to share with people, like on this podcast and making short form content and maybe a documentary. Like there's a lot of like juice or good jujus and things like that. And we just want to be able to pay that forward to other artists and other bands who want to pull off similar feats.
Nice. Nice. Thanks. Cool. That's great. You know, it is really cool to hear that there were six of you part of this tour, four in the band, Matt, the manager, Sam, the cam, and you all had your roles. You all pulled your weight. And like, what's so cool is like, people who are listening to this or not watching this, they probably are having a hard time differentiating who's the manager speaking and who's the artist speaking, which is not always the case. Like when I interviewed Roger Shahayed, who's the nominated for producer of the year this year for a Grammy, and his manager, it was very clear in that conversation who the manager was and who the artist was. And any of the creative artistic questions, you know, Roger took, and then any of the business questions, his manager took. And it's cool to see you guys, that you're partners in this operation, and you all pull your weight. You know, you're mentioning how, Eric and Richard, they're doing some of the editing and stuff like that, because it's like everyone's got their skills, and you know, Andrew did a bit of the booking here, and it's just like everyone's kind of pulling their weight, which I'm guessing is the reason that this was a success. You made it, you did all 50 shows, you came out, you came back in one piece, you're alive. I guess I should ask you, do you consider this a success?
Absolutely. Yes. Without 100%.
Okay.
Even purely from the experience perspective, 100% a success. And then we profited on this thing. So
let's talk cheddar here. What are we talking?
We're talking
gross numbers. Let's talk gross numbers. Let's talk profit.
Matt, you want to pull up?
Yeah, we don't even have to shy around. I mean, between everything, we grossed just shy of $80,000. It was like 79 and something. And merch was the largest revenue stream. Not going to lie. We got a sponsorship with a brewery who didn't talk about that. Narragansett Brewing in Rhode Island. I hit them up just like to book a show.
Check it out.
And we had custom beer cans made. So
that's sick.
They love the concept. They love the branding. They're like, yo, we're down for a show, but can we sponsor you? And we had talked about getting sponsors, and I'd gotten sponsors for a festival I put on in Michigan. So like I had experience like pitching brands, but there were so many moving parts at any one point that it was hard to ever like not be in booking mode or not be in TikTok mode or not be in like let's get healthy and make a quality meal mode type of thing. So, you know, sponsorship, we got a few $1,000 of sponsorship. I got to say, the profit margin ended up being like the amount we profited was almost identical to how much was donated. So if you look at just like all of the revenue earned from touring or from shows, merch and sponsorship, that pretty much equaled our costs. And then anything people donated ended up being the margin. So,
and when you mean donated, what do you mean by donated?
That means like we talked about, we had merch items that were not physical merch items. Buy us a tank of gas, $40.
Only on the website, so not at the shows. It's not like a tip jar you're talking.
But at the same time, well, we did do tip jars, but also, so we had like a barcode that we put on our van, and it was a magnet, and you'd scan it, and it would take you to our website.
QR code.
I'm sorry, a QR code. And we'd be driving on, I was like driving us into New York City. We were in like bumper to bumper traffic, and some dude looks at us, waves, donates $25. We're at a gas station in Maine, and we're just like filling gas. And this woman comes up and was like, "Are you guys really a band touring all 50 states?" And Richard was the one who was speaking with her, and he's like, "Yup, we're doing the thing." And she's like, "Here's some money," and just like handed us cash.
Nice.
And, you know, like those type of tips go a long way. But then,
and then she came back to buy a hat.
She came back to buy a hat. But taking it even a step further, I'm not going to name names, but we were in the most random city in Oregon, and it's a brewery, and the guys were like low energy. We were all like really tired. It was just Halloween in San Francisco, and you know, like we were tired. And anyway, we do the show, and the brewery could not have been nicer. It's called Too Shy Brewing, and a woman, I'm running the merch right at the entrance, and a woman walks in, and she comes up to me at the merch booth. She goes, "Is that Richard Becker on guitar?" And I'm like, "Oh yeah, this is Walden." And I'm like, "Fuck yeah, it's Walden." And she's like I'm from Roswell, Georgia. My son went to school with them. Like, I know these guys. And she's like, "Don't say anything. You know, don't tell the guys." And then at some point during the set, you know, there was like a moment of silence, and then she like stood up or something and was like, "You know, can you believe someone from Roswell or from Pope, you know, whatever it was?" Like, she shouts it out, and the guys were just like, "Holy shit." And then at the end of the night, she gave us a few $100, and she was like, "This will probably help you get." She's like, "This should help with a few hotel rooms." And we were like, "We can't take this from you. Like, you, that is too kind." And she's like, "No, like, you're taking it." And things like that, it just kind of piled up, and people supporting us. And you know, the love was real. The guys are all, you know, like standout dudes, and they had friends and family all over who were like, "We love Walden. We love what they're doing, and we want to support this mission. So, you know, here's $50 to get to Hawaii, or here's $80 for a hotel room, or here's, you know," funny story. I was selling merch to someone, and she bought two t-shirts. I'm like, "Thank you. You know, this is amazing. Like, this is probably going to buy us Taco Bell for the night." And that was a sales tactic. And then she said, "Wait, you guys are eating Taco Bell?" And then she donated $150 and said, "Get something better than Taco Bell." And I proceeded to use that a couple times. Yeah. It got a little bit old, but it worked. And it was genuine, because we had Taco Bell like three times a week.
I think one thing that's important to note.
Came home alive. Impressive.
Yeah. I think one thing that's important to note too is, like, I think especially in 2022, by this point, every musician's either thought about or done a Kickstarter and Indiegogo. Mm-hmm. And I think all of us have this like really deep rooted fear, and we just cringe about ever having to do one ever again.
Yeah.
And you know, we were in a tight financial spot, and from the start of this, we were thinking like, how can we gamify this? How can we make this fun to participate in and not just feel like we're taking your money, but instead you're getting to be part of this big adventure with a clear goal, play in all 50 states. And so like, we talk about raising money for the flights, but we didn't just take people's money. In exchange for that, we were like, "We're going to send you a signed Polaroid from our adventures." You know, and we mailed those out just a few weeks ago. You know what I mean?
So a handwritten card.
Exactly.
Nice.
So that, you know, we were always thinking about, how do we make this fun for everyone, not just fun for us, not just like we're free riders that are taking your money and having the time of our lives, but think about, how can people get involved with this and also take joy out of it? And we got so many messages from people who were super inspired by what we were doing, just thought it was really creative. Yeah. And inspired them to kind of think outside of the box about what they're doing.
That's great. Yeah. And you know, I think everyone listening and I can especially relate on the cringing at the Kickstarter, the crowdfunding campaign. But this is a way more fun of a way to go about, you know, is a full adventure. And I did see that, you know, it's an easy thing to explain to people at the gas station or on stage or wherever. We're an indie band from Nashville. We're doing 50 states on $50. We're playing, you know, playing every single state. And people get excited about that. That's a story that they can tell. And it always comes down to the story. People need something to latch onto. And that's the tagline. That's the log line. And so like, I'm always, you know, when I'm talking to musicians and I'm just like, what makes you different? What sets you apart? And it's just like, you know, we spent this whole hour, we haven't even touched on your music, which is excellent, by the way. I really dig the sound. I'm a fan. We didn't even talk about the music because it's like, this is the story, you know?
and by the way, you guys make music.
Yeah, I know. But you're on the New Music Business, you know, podcast, and so that's what we're here to talk about. Once you go on Song Exploder, you can talk about the songs and the music. But, you know, so but that's the thing. It's like this is the story of the band of the moment right now, and that's what's exciting. And I was like, you know, I was browsing your Instagram and seeing how, you know, the dude in Missouri was so excited by the mission, he bought $300 worth of merch and all of that stuff, and you know.
Legend.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, so you have all of these people that are so excited to be part of this journey. And mind you, like, we haven't talked about this or mentioned this. It's like, looking at your numbers, you know, is like, we're in this obsessed society and culture, especially in entertainment right now, where we're all like neurotic about everybody's numbers. And it's like, numbers don't tell the full story. Like, you know, your Instagram sits below 10,000 followers, and, you know, your Spotify is at around like 16,000-17,000 monthly listeners with like a million plus streams or whatever. That's like, if you glance at these numbers, there's no way that I would have expected saying that after a tour you're grossing $80,000 and that you're even able to go on a tour. Most people are like, well, I can't tour until I got a billion streams and like, you know, 10 million followers. That's the thing, is like, you're a perfect example of, it's just like, no, you got great music, you put on a great show, and if you put in the work, you can make it happen, and fuck the numbers, because like the numbers don't, like, they don't tell any part of the story, and it's all fleeting and negligible at this point too. It's just like, what are streams, what are views, what are followers, you know? And it's just like the connection and the reaction that you get from these people at these shows, like, you can't quantify that in a number on social media. Mm-hmm. And so, like, you guys talk about the experiences that you have, and like, yeah, I mean, that is not quantifiable. And so it's like that, and the fact that you guys, you know, you're all saying this was a success, and it's like, however you measure success, you know, that's all extremely personal. And so I want to actually end, this segues us into the final question that I ask everybody who comes on the show. And that is, what does it mean to you to make it in the new music business?
I think it's doing exactly what you want to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
Not everyone wants the same thing out of this industry. And for us, the pandemic finally made us sit down and take a look at, what do we want our career to look like? For so long, we've just been playing the game of like, mm-hmm. what's an indie band supposed to do to be successful? We're just going to play the game until it finally works out for us. And yep. like you said, we were so obsessed with chasing the numbers. And finally, we realized like, wait, maybe we can hack this. Maybe we can live the exact type of career that we want. Just yep. by being creative and clever, and we don't have to wait till we have 30 million streams on a song to tour all 50 states. And so that was the beauty of this tour, is we actually lived out exactly the type of career that we'd want anyways. It was our dream tour, and we actually made it happen just by being clever and inventive, instead of sitting around and making excuses, waiting till some industry person comes and becomes our Jesus.
I love that. Eric, thank you. Does anyone else want to add anything?
No, Matt, you probably have a different angle. I mean, not to put you on the spot, but
yeah, I mean, I love the question, because I think about it in general, like, what does it mean to make it, right? Like, not just in the new music industry, but I think about mm-hmm. it and broadly speaking, you know, like more specifically, like, I think you've made it in the new music business if you can, you know, if you can support yourself doing what you love to do artistically. Mm-hmm. Whatever that means, if that means, mm-hmm. you know, being able to retire on it, or if it means you can travel the country with your friends, I think that's one take. But more broadly, if you love, I think if this applies to any industry, if you love what you do, you're doing what you love, and you're surrounded by people who support you and who you know, you can have fun with and can enjoy like this life you get. And to me, you've made it. And in any industry, because a lot of people are chasing the clout or the finances or this and that. And I've always believed that people who work hard, those who stay, all good things happen to those who stay true. I think Tupac said that. I'm a big believer in just doing what you feel and being self-aware. And so to me, yeah, if you've made it, if you love what you do and you're surrounded by amazing people. And I've thought about that the whole tour, you know, even if we're playing this room or we've sold this many tickets, like I feel like we've made our dream tour have come true. And at the end of the night, it's the six of us hanging out and being together. And, you know, were there moments where we bickered? Yeah. But, you know, we came out of this closer than ever. And, you know, I think that I speak for everyone. I say it was the tour of a lifetime.
Cool.
And we literally couldn't have done it without Matt and Sam. So yeah. They awesome. Are incredible people and amazing team members. So
cool. Yeah. Well, Walden, thank you guys. Thank you, Matt. Thank you for being a part of this. This is a lot of fun and I wish you all the best.
Yeah. Thanks,
Ari. It was so cool. Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by DistroKid. DistroKid is a distribution service that can get your music into all the DSPs like Spotify, Apple Music, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram. Over a million artists have used DistroKid. I'm one of those artists. I've used DistroKid to get my music out, distribute some of my songs. As you know, as I look into all of these distribution services, I test them out. And DistroKid is great. They offer a ton of features, annual fee, unlimited uploads, and you keep 100% of your royalties. Check out distrokid.com.